their widowhood and their destitution. That is the problem that we have with the story. The characters are Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, ordinary people, as Zach said to us the other day, ordinary people with quite ordinary problems. We're going to look at who is the main protagonist in the story as we go through it. And we'll also look at the principles, two principles that come out of that last chapter that we can apply here today in Karori in Wellington in each of our situations. As well as that, we'll just look at the overall shape and what we can generally take from this story for ourselves as a church and as individuals. In chapter 1, Zach spoke about the faithfulness of God, and he spoke very well and explored rightfully the theme of suffering. The theme of suffering, which is something we need to address as a people of God and has been addressed through the Israelites and through the Old and the New Testament. None of us, he said, can go through life without experiencing or feeling that God has let us down. I don't know if Zach quoted anyone else, but I'm quoting Zach, and I thought that was an excellent quote. None of us can go through life without experiencing or feeling that God has let us down. Ruth in chapter 2 spoke of God's kindness, and Naomi's and Ruth's fortunes, they again change radically. And Ruth said that all we have is nothing, and all we need is need. And I spoke to Ruth. I said, where'd you get that from? She said, I made it up. So I'm quoting my wife. All we have is nothing, and all we need is need, which I think is quite profound. This is a short story about good people to whom life has been unkind to. It busts apart the ancient pagan misconception and a modern misconception that our circumstances and prosperity reflect whether or not the gods are smiling upon us. It busts apart that pagan misconception and misunderstanding. And I think we all bring that with us in our relationship with God. I remember sitting in church, and when I was first a Christian and down in Dunedin, I came to faith. I remember sitting in church and just really fearful that God was going to expose my sins because I had this image of God being primarily a God of judgment, which is something I think all of us default to and have done throughout history. And if you look at the Roman and Greek gods, they were incredibly fickle and incredibly powerful. The Jewish God is quite different. And this story encapsulates that perfectly. The book of Ruth is very similar to the book of Job, or the book of Joseph, or sorry, the book of Genesis, where the story of Joseph, where the main characters stumble upon the toughness and misfortune of life. As Zach said, we all do. Sometimes, even Steve Henson's All Blacks stumble across the misfortunes of life. Now, there's a turning point in this story, and Ruth mentioned it today, and also Alison mentioned it the other week. And the turning point is when Ruth, with Naomi, instead of fleeing a luckless Naomi, stays with her, and more than that, claims Naomi's people as her people and her God as her God. This is the turning point of this short story. And once that happens, stuff starts to happen. To put in a literary term, stuff starts to happen. In chapter 2 and 3, as it turned out, there's a key phrase there. In chapter 2, verse 3, as it turned out, Ruth found herself working in a field for Boaz, who was from her clan. Now, how many of you have had an as-it-turned-out moment in your life? Hands up. How many people have had an as-it-turned-out moment in their life? Fantastic. I remember when I was acting in Wellington, and it was my first professional production, well, my second professional production, and I got to the end of it, and I had auditions coming, which was unusual. Well, not unusual, but it was good. But I had this burning, nagging feeling deep within my spirit that I was to go overseas and go on a missionary ship called the Anastasis with YWAM. So I turned down these auditions, and I booked a ticket to go to London, because that's what we do when you're 27. And on the way, I found out that the Anastasis, which is a doctor's or a medical ship, was going to be in London after 4 months of me being in London. Now, what happened then, as it turned out, was I met my wife, as it turned out. So there were two as-it-turned-out moments. In that time when I said no to something that I loved doing, I loved acting, and things were starting to happen, and I said no to that, and I said yes to God. And I'm very, very glad that I did. So as-it-turned-out moments are important for us and for our story, as it was in this story. Now, things just didn't automatically come right. There remain some hoops for Boaz and for Ruth to jump through, which we're going to look at today. There's a couple of things we can learn, or principles we can take from this, by looking at the hoops they jumped through and how they went about that. It's interesting. Instead of taking shortcuts or arranging things behind closed doors, Boaz, because we hear in the story that the nearest kinsman was someone else, it wasn't Boaz. Boaz is obviously very much in love with Ruth, and Ruth was obviously attracted to Boaz, but there was something stopping them, like a good romantic story. There was something stopping them coming together. And it was this other kinsman who had the automatic rights to inherit the land and to take on the widow, to redeem the widow. So what did they do? The temptation would have been for Boaz to think, oh my goodness, this might not work out. So to do things behind closed doors, as we see happening a lot in politics at the moment, particularly in America. Yeah? But he does something quite different. And let's have a look at that. As you can imagine, the rumors that could possibly start with an older man obviously wanting to marry a younger foreigner. Boaz was mindful of his own and Ruth's reputation. So he meets at the city gate, like a public square. Everything is totally transparent. And he meets with 10 Jewish elders. And he meets also with the other relative. Now Boaz then lets him know what his obligations and his rights are in regard to the land. He is totally transparent, totally upfront, and totally righteous in this business matter. Now we can glean from that a principle of ourselves being totally upright, totally transparent, totally righteous in our business transactions with anyone. And all of us are involved in business transactions, whether you know it or not. The IRD, real estate agents, lawyers, universities, tradies, etc., etc. As people of God, we are called to be above reproach. in matters of the law, with the police and with the authorities, above reproach, righteous in all our acts of business, paying people what they are owed and paying them on time. Now, I'm just reminded that I owe someone some money and I need to deal with that quickly. But we all are. Boaz is a righteous role model for us that we should take note of. Now, the kinsman initially accepts the offer, but then Boaz reminds the kinsman coolly and calmly that he is obligated to marry the previous landowner's widow, Ruth, according to Deuteronomy 25:5. Now, this raises the second principle we can glean ourselves from this passage. God takes care of the vulnerable in Jewish society, and he takes the vulnerable's cases very seriously. Now, when I came back after being away from New Zealand for 18 years, I was really incredibly struck by the amount of homelessness and the begging in the streets that I never ever saw in New Zealand. So our society has changed quite radically over the last decade, where the vulnerable are not so much cared for as they used to be in this country. And we need to be careful of that as a church and as individuals, that we don't get sucked into the mindset that, well, these people haven't paid their dues or they haven't done what is necessary to be as successful as maybe, perhaps, or lucky as what we are. Because this is something that goes against the character of the God we worship. This is something in God's character that does not change and has not changed since the Old Testament. We as a church and as individuals, we similarly are called to care for the poor. How do we do that? Well, on national radio, yesterday, there was a woman speaking on behalf of New Zealand Harvest. I don't know if anyone heard this, but New Zealand Harvest, she was a lawyer and she felt dissatisfied with her career, with advancing herself as being her main objective. She wanted to do something significant. So what she did is she saw an incredible amount of food waste happening and she saw people who were struggling, like we were talking about. And what she did is she started New Zealand Harvest, which go around, they employ people to gather up food that is waste food or left over from restaurants and Wishbone and places like that. And they redistributed that food to people who needed it from other places. Now, this is called gleaning the edges of the fields. She's doing exactly what a Christian and Jewish principle was from the Old Testament. Now, we see this also with kibosh. I don't know if you know kibosh. Kibosh, I work, as some of you know, I work one day a week down at, or half a day a week down at Massey, coordinating the chaplaincy. We started a cafe down there called Koha Cafe. Some of you have experienced that. And what it does is it's got a community of worshiping students. We have breakfast together once a week, and two times a week we serve coffee, really good coffee, to the students. Now, the students love it. And the students who work there love it. Now, the Massey organization who I work for, they could not see this working. Why would students want to serve other students for nothing? Well, there's a different call in most of our lives to do something significant that makes a difference. It's a thriving community down there that joins these students together who have previously been very disconnected. And kibosh used to provide us with the beans for that. So they started us off. So the gleaning of the kibosh vision has brought life to Massey University not just to the Christian students, but to the students in general. So that's a principle of gleaning that we see, not just by churches or Christians, by others in the world. How can we bless those in Karori and their points of need? Well, we've got EC and we've got Smash. EC, and Smash. These ministries were established to bless our community and also bring people from our community together. What's just happened this week, some of you might not, probably don't know this, is that Heather Tahuia, who leads our ECEC, she and Tabitha, who leads SMASH, were with us in our huddle, which is our small group, staff group, and they felt really compelled to start a missional community. And a missional community at a point of need where the parents were saying to Heather and to the teachers, we want to get together, and particularly new parents in Karori who come from overseas, and there's an increasing number of them. They said, we want to get together, and we want to meet other people. We want to find a place where we belong. So just this week, they had a drinks and nibbles evening and invited the parents to come in, and they listened to them and found out what they want. They want to get together socially, and they want some parenting help as well. So they're doing that. So please, guys, please pray for them and for that group. Like the Massey group, people are longing for a place to belong. It's ironic, isn't it? In this world of interconnectedness, there is all this disconnectedness. People want real community where people really care about them and don't judge them. How can we leave gleanings for those who need those gleanings? I'll leave that for you to ponder. So in this story, the dominoes of grace begin to fall. And as happens when God honors faithful people, the grace comes not in a trickle but in a flood. Not in a trickle, but in a flood. Redemption is rife in this story. It gushes forth. Now, what is redeemed? It's not just one thing. It is many, many things. The land is redeemed. The name of Elimelech and Naomi's family is redeemed. They shall remain on the town records. I don't know if that reminds you of anything, but it reminds me of my name being written in the book of life. Naomi and Ruth are not forgotten, and neither were their husbands, because of God's action. Ruth and Naomi's lives are redeemed. Food and shelter and a place to belong are given to them again. But most importantly, to the story and to the Jewish nation, a child is born, Obed, meaning servant. And through Obed, we get Jesse, the father of King David, from whom Jesus, the true and everlasting King, is born. And we celebrate that King today in the communion. God is the true main character of this story. The Deus ex machina, which is Latin for God and the machine. This idea comes from Greek and Roman theater, when they used to portray the gods. And I don't know if you know in theater, but they call the gods the places up there. Yeah? And what they used to do was they used to lower the gods with a machine from the rafters. Now this term, Deus ex machina, means God in action, off stage. And this is exactly what the book of Ruth is about. The God in action off stage is the main character of the story. It's kind of beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. And it's the same in our lives. the main character in action in our lives is off stage, working through us. God takes two destitute women and he weaves them into his grand narrative of redemption, not just for Israel, but the whole human race. Remember that as we come to communion in a moment. We invite you again to partake in that grand narrative when you come to communion. It is a huge privilege. The God who is off stage inviting us to partake with him. Now remember Naomi and Ruth wondering and thinking where they were, where God was, in their absolute poverty and strife? Would they ever forget? I doubt it. And little did they know that God was weaving, like a tapestry, their lives into his grand narrative, as he does today with you and myself. With all those ordinary acts of kindness, words of encouragement, small acts of witness, God is weaving a tapestry of his grand narrative with you in it and myself, especially when we struggle. Now, we all know the story of how tapestries are made. Yeah? If you turn them, actually the weavers or the tapestry makers would be working in the reverse side, and it would just look a mess. But then you turn it around, and these beautiful medieval French tapestries would look incredible. Yeah, everyone knows that story. Yeah, that image. I'm going to read to you as we finish. This is a poem by Corrie ten Boom, and it's about that tapestry. My life is but a weaving between my God and me. I cannot choose the colors he weaveth steadily. Oft times he weaveth sorrow, and I, in foolish pride, forget he sees the upper and not the underside. Not till the loom is silent and the shuttles cease to fly will God unroll the canvas and reveal the reasons why. The dark threads are as needful in the weaver's skillful hand as the threads of gold and silver in the pattern he has planned. He knows, he loves, he cares. Nothing this truth can dim. He gives the very best to those who leave the choice to him. Now you can, for those of you who don't know Corrie ten Boom, her sister died in the concentration camp in Auschwitz. She knows suffering, which makes that poem even that more profound. Let's pray.